Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Psychology Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Hoy. The Psychology Talk Podcast is a unique conversation about psychology and behavioral health from around the globe. We help you expand your knowledge by connecting you in conversation with experts in the field. Topics include hypnosis and mind-body treatments, breakthroughs in neuroscience and psychology, social and ethical considerations of behavioral health and psychology, and international trends in mental health and wellness. While you're listening, please take a moment to subscribe to us and give us a like or a review. It helps us to grow and continue to provide you with quality information and interviews. And now, here is the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Psychology Talk Podcast. Today, my guest is Dr. Karen Messina. Dr. Messina is a clinical psychologist and supervising and training analyst at the Washington Baltimore Center for Psychoanalysis and is on the medical staff of Johns Hopkins Medicine in Bethesda, Maryland. She maintains a full-time private practice in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Dr. Messina is the author of several books, including Misogyny, Projective Identification and Mentalization, and Aftermath, Healing from the Trump Presidency. Today, she is here to discuss her new book, Resurgence of Global Populism, a psychoanalytic study of projective identification, blame shifting, and the corruption of democracy. Dr. Messina, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I've been reading the book, and it's a very important book. I think it's a really good mix of great research on the current political climate globally. So it must have taken a lot of time to really put this together, and also the application of practical psychoanalytic ideas to how populist leaders think and do what they do.
Absolutely. Well, you've got that right.
Yeah. Okay.
I like to put a frame around this concept because it's a complex one, and particularly complex because there isn't agreement among a lot of people on exactly what it is. Some people think that it shouldn't be used because in one country, the person who is a populist looks very different than in another country. They're right-wing populist and left-wing populist. So that's one thought. Another thought is that it stigmatizes people, and it's a stigmatizing concept, and it should be eliminated. But the fact of the matter is, it does exist. Something happens with leaders who exhibit certain traits. So I think it's what we have for now. And I think we need to keep it because there is some understanding, some common agreement. Mm-hmm. So I think most people who do use the term think of it as a political movement with a charismatic leader who says he's representing the people versus the establishment or the elite. These people say they're going to get back for the people what the establishment or elite have taken from them. But the problem is they never make good on their promises. I think to a person, they use deceptive techniques and false beliefs to get people to think they're going in the right direction. They lie to the people who follow them. And they infuse these movements with emotion. They rabble rouse. They get them all fired up and charged up with their belief system. So these people are ready to go out and fight for them. Eventually, I mean, that's in the beginning. Eventually, free speech is often eliminated. If we go further down into this rabbit hole of populism, I think there are three things for me that are a little bit different than what some other people are saying. But this is from a psychoanalytic perspective. So I think the three things. One is the term splitting. It's a defense mechanism. Another is projective identification. And a way to think about that is blame shifting. It's not me, it's you. It's always you. It's not me. I didn't do it. That's fundamentally what it is. But more technically, it's something about myself I don't like that I can't tolerate it. So I put it on you. I project it onto you and say, you're the person who does that, not me. So I've incorporated blame shifting because I think it's much more understandable. Yeah. And by the way, projective identification is part of domestic violence. It's a part of just about everything you can think of that people do to each other, bullying, mean girls. It's something that someone's projecting onto the other person. A very quick example is bullying. Bullies have been bullied someplace in their lives.
Absolutely.
But rather than tolerate it, and maybe they can't, but rather than doing anything about it, seeking help, telling somebody about it, they bully the kid on the playground, for example, who is maybe a little bit on the scrawny side. And he's the kid who isn't popular and is this and is that and whatever. So the bully's freed up from having to feel those things. So it's putting it on someone else. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I think that is what is going on. And I think the way you describe it is absolutely kind of doing that for the masses to kind of identify with, right. Mm-hmm. For people who might be underserved or, the situation I think you pointed out in one of the chapters on what's been happening in the United States is that more poverty is happening. More people are struggling in order to make ends meet. They become reactive in general, and their minds and their brains kind of go offline with kind of more pro-social thinking, and it's more apt for them to also project onto the other. The unacceptable as a means to quickly reduce self-blame or shame.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you make a really good point for that in the book. Maybe you can kind of talk about, I think there was a Santa Cruz, UFC Santa Cruz study that you mentioned. Do you remember that? And the five traits that were kind of looked at with regards to Donald Trump?
Well, there are plenty of traits with regard to Donald Trump.
I think they said authoritarian personality syndrome, social dominance orientation, prejudice, intergroup contact, and relative deprivation. I think what I just mentioned is kind of the relative deprivation of people. Right? Uh-huh. Certainly that authoritarian personality syndrome, I mean, I know that this is their study, but I've never heard of that as an actual syndrome.
Well, it's a new syndrome. I think it's maybe malignant narcissism on steroids.
Okay. All right.
But basically, all of these people are big time narcissists.
Okay.
And narcissists are really, they're insecure people, but they puff themselves up and they put all of these, it's as if putting costumes on. Obviously, they're very showy. They demand praise. They demand admiration. They feel entitled to whatever they want. And this is true of populace across the board. They care about themselves when it comes right down to it. And they're pros at exploiting people. So I think that it pretty much covers what you're talking about in the big picture.
Yeah. I mean, I think the intrapsychic or the internal processes that these people kind of magically, fluidly flip through by blaming others and just keeping everything, keeping the not me or the non-self or away from, or the bad self away from themselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you give some particular examples if you would like? You don't have to hit close to home. I think that a lot of people are probably tired of hearing about Donald Trump, but if you want to use him, you can use Donald Trump as an example.
Or
you can use, plenty of good examples in the book that you give. It's not just him. It's not just us.
Populism is all, it's all over the place. And it, well, if you just start with, we'll start with Great Britain and kind of go around the world that way, if that's okay.
Sure.
Boris Johnson, now he's not there anymore, but he was a major populist. Poland is a populist country run by Morawiecki. A big major populist these days is Viktor Orban. And he is now really in with CPAC and that part of Trump's party. And it's some of the things he gave his speech at CPAC recently. And it's really scary. He's talking about his idea of American and Hungarian troops somehow working together.
Oh, that sounds like a grand idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Being combined. So yeah, he's got a lot of ideas like that. I understand from someone who sent me an article from who actually grew up in Hungary that when I believe she was in high school, they literally took the history books away and they replaced them with new history books. And they replaced them. What was history today is not history when the new books come in. One example is that Hungarians sent approximately, maybe a little less, but approximately 500,000 Jewish people to Germany. They ended up in Auschwitz, but Hungary doesn't want that stain. So they, you know, kind of project that elsewhere. The story is that Viktor Orban can't stand George Soros, who is his benefactor to Soros.
I saw that. And in the book, you outline how two American Jewish consultants helped him create this plan to smear George Soros, which now, of course, is all over the internet. Like people probably in, you know, Costa Rica or everywhere, anywhere are blaming him for the price of onions or apples or something, right?
Right. He started putting big billboards in Hungary about how bad George Soros was. But that's a way, that's one way, for example, people get rid of something about themselves or their history or their culture and put it on someone else. And then they're the bad unscrupulous person. So this is all over the place, this phenomenon of blame shifting.
You mentioned that in Poland, there's also kind of a wish to kind of eradicate responsibility for some of the atrocities against the Jews in World War II, right? You know, it was the Germans, we didn't do it.
Yeah. We didn't, no, yeah, that's right. We didn't do it. The Germans did it. And also, things have really tightened up in Poland. Speaking of Poland, I don't know what's happened since the Ukrainian war has happened. It seems like they've been helpful to their not countrymen, but their people in an adjacent country. But nevertheless, they've really cut down on free speech. The government or one group owns most of the media. So saying what you want to say in Poland is not something that's acceptable. Uh-huh. So that's really tightened up. Free speech is really tightened up in Poland too. There are lots of factions in Germany that are pro-populist groups. Same is true in France. Marine Le Pen, I mean, she didn't win the election, but she got a lot of votes and her group is still going strong. So it's a central and Eastern Europe. They're filled with populists, as is Turkey. Erdogan is a major populist. Then just kind of going around the globe, as I'm doing it here, India.
Oh yeah, Modi. Yeah, I go to India a lot. My wife is Indian, and so I go visit in law. So I'm very familiar with the talk pro and con of mostly con about what's going on there.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen Modi project himself. He does some kind of 3D projection of himself. So he, when he gives talks, all of the villagers have access to that. This technology. So there, Modi is. Giving his talk. So yeah, he's used technology to his benefit for sure.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that is kind of creepy.
Yeah. Just kind of moving down a little further, quite a bit further. Duterte, of course, in the Philippines, is a major populist. Now, he's thought of as a left-wing populist, and that's a little curious. The people in the Philippines... Many of the people in the Philippines, I can't speak, I don't know the percentage, but they like part of what he's done because he's cut down on drug trade very strongly. In fact, he prosecutes people, I mean, whether they're guilty or whether they're innocent, if they have anything to do with drugs, he's even killed people himself and he's admitted it. So he doesn't need to prosecute them. He does to the fullest extent. So that's one positive thing. But nevertheless, he's ruling the whole country.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you do. It seems like the ones that stick out the most, the rock stars of populism, are kind of on the right of things. I wonder why that is. I mean, there are obviously people who do the same projective identification, et cetera, on the left. Is it less popular because? Those leaders don't reach into a bag of voyeuristic tricks and quickly use basic language. I mean, are they less apt to use basic language in speaking to the people on the left? Or is it, like here, it seems like everybody's really into they're policy wonks, even if they're leftist populist people. I mean, like Bernie Sanders he tends to be a nice guy and he doesn't blame shit a lot, I think. He's kind of a populist, right? I mean, but not in the same manner. He's not trying to be a strong man.
Although he would be definitely benign.
Yeah, benign populist, yeah. Yeah.
The church, that's curious to me. I'm not really sure why. I mean, the people do like him, but then the people who like Trump like him. So I guess it's not just what kind of a following you have.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I think he promotes women and he puts women down at the same time. So
you're talking about Trump or?
Yeah, I'm just talking about Duterte. I guess I could.
Him. Yeah.
He's put women in powerful positions, and yet he says very disparaging things about them. There was a rape case, and there was, I guess, discussion among reporters, and he said, well, something like, it's too bad. I should have had first crack at this person. So, I mean, it's pretty.
oh God, yeah, that's like
pretty terrible. Yeah,
and yet he promotes women. I guess
he does. In some ways he does. Yeah,
they're able to handle the sexism.
I guess if they can.
Misogyny. Yeah.
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 What somebody from the Philippines told me is that the Philippines is a very poor country, and they can be rather docile. And he has done things for them. I think this one reason why he might be considered a left-wing populist. He's done a lot for medical care, for medical insurance, to make sure people, many, many, many people are covered with health care that weren't covered previously. So he does have some things that he wants to do to help the people, but I mean, I'm certainly not here to defend him because he does some other atrocious things.
Yeah. So we've kind of taken a global look at things. Of course, there's Turkey is another spot where this is going on. It almost seems like globalism, maybe it reached its nadir point or its height or something, and pluralism that goes along with that to some degree. And then people like it, maybe the globalism has disempowered some parts of people within the countries that are participating in that. And then people step in to create order, so to speak, air quotes. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why this is kind of a universal thing that's going on. Our separate kind of tribal experiences within our countries are not so well established, or there's cracks in the system, so to speak.
Well, resurgence is really, it's not just because I chose it. I think maybe Rutledge chose that particular word, but it ebbs and flows. Populism actually goes back to the fall of ancient Greece. It's very old. There's a populist in ancient Greece who was very narcissistic, and if he had modern day clothes, you would think he was on Fifth Avenue because of the way he was very privileged, and he acted that way, very narcissistic. So it goes way back, obviously. Yeah. But it seems like it doesn't seem like it is on the upswing. And so it's in South America, Central America. And the question is it in America? I would say Trump took us down that road. And where we go from here is a big question mark. It certainly isn't a given that we're going to have democracy in America forever. And I think many people, if this were a conversation 10 years ago, 5 years ago, I think people wouldn't resonate with it too much, because I think many of us thought, well, yeah, of course, democracy's been here for 200-ish years. Yeah, of course. It's just a given. Our children will experience and their children will experience democracy, but they may not.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a can of worms. You're welcome to describe how Trump took us down that road. Maybe for people who, I don't know, haven't been watching the media or social media for the past, you know, 7 to 10 years or whatever, but you're welcome to do that. Or maybe you could look at some of the contributing factors like you mentioned in the book, like social media.
Well, social media, I think actually it's an interesting question today. I saw Macron, the president of France, of course, yesterday, and he was saying something about how social media started out to be a good thing, and now it isn't a good thing anymore because there's so much false information and fake news that gets distributed and then redistributed and then reposted and retweeted. And so that people believe, I mean, they believe these things that are outrageous, that most news channels would not even think of saying these things. And the thing with algorithms and social media is that people stay engaged longer, therefore they're more likely to buy something from the ads that pop up all the time. If there is acrimony, if it's a contentious thing, a discussion going on, then people stay on longer. So that is only helping the company, the platform, and the people who are advertising to have people actually have all of these contentious arguments or listen to others who are having them and really get hyped up about it. That can't be good. Yeah. Somehow somebody has to get a grip on that. There has to be some regulation of that.
Yeah, I think that people are getting siloed into their own non-socially engaged world on social media. Yeah. And it's also very powerful, and a lot of information has come out at how a lot of the AI has been programmed to keep you engaged through various types of reward systems, intermittent rewards, right? And that's basically going back to conditioning.
Absolutely.
Types of conditioning. So they've utilized that to manipulate us. Certainly doesn't help self-esteem. If your self-esteem goes down, you're going to look for an easy answer to feel better about yourself. And one way would be to go, as you were saying earlier, splitting, blame shifting, projection, you know, like you're easier to buy into that, I suppose. It also seems like it's social media, no matter what it is, you're listening to someone who's the expert tell you about things. And if you do that long enough, it's going to shift your perspective on reality, whether it's good information or, you know, that meets reality testing or if it's delusional thinking.
Yeah.
And as you know, and if you have enough of a kind of mass hysteria, if you will, or a shift, enough of the population shifts to a certain way of thinking, it's really difficult to root that out. And it's like, if you've ever, I'm sure you have, talked to somebody who's suffering from a delusion, you can't get them out of that kind of pretend mode bubble and kind of get them into a back and forth that's, you know, reality testing.
Yeah,
so it's kind of a mass pretend mode, these bubbles that are popping up all over the place and causing people to be fractured. I know that people are really getting down on social media now. You mentioned that. Macron said that. And here in the States, who's the senator from Minnesota? What's her name? She's Democratic senator. She's looking into taking care of moderating or controlling social media more, maybe putting FCC rules upon it. That's good. And for goodness sakes, we really need to have the fairness doctrine put back into the general media.
Yeah, that's one of the things I recommended. It's some commission. Somebody needs to oversee it and to have consequences for infractions. I mean, somebody has to do something about saying anything at all with no basis in truth and having millions of people believe it. The other thing that's so hard about social media is that people feel like they belong to something. They can create any kind of person they want, and they give followers. And people who are lonely, disenfranchised in any way, on the outside of any in-group, if they have these unknown followers, that makes them feel good about themselves. And this, or they, yeah, it does. It boosts their self-esteem. And that, even though it's smoke and mirrors, so to speak, it's not real, it feels real to them. So how do you, I mean, I don't know the answer, but how do you shift that around? I mean, I have some ideas about it, but it's difficult.
Well, okay. So what are some of those ideas? Maybe you can like put them out there.
People are isolated because they don't feel part of a community anymore. There's so many splits and factions in communities that a lot of people in the same town, they don't talk to each other. Somehow we have to get back to community building in some way by talking about shared goals. Every community has something to be shared. Braver Angels, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Braver Angels, but it's a group that Bill Doherty and someone else, I don't know the other person, but I do know Bill Doherty, and he started this right after the 2016 election because there were so many contentious things starting then. And he basically, and it's a pretty large group now across the country, he gets red state and blue state people to attend workshops, and he has them sit down and talk with each other about things they disagree with and to find some common ground. I attended one of these. I was skeptical. And I attended several, and it actually works. In that sort of setting, now these people are agreeing to come in to talk. There are a lot of people who probably wouldn't. He's also done some of these groups on the Hill, but it's really impressive to listen to people, listen to the other side in an atmosphere of respect. And that is sort of mentalization. I call mentalization active listening in an atmosphere of respect, because nobody really knows. Few people know what the word mentalization means, but it's impressive. And what they talk about is starting small. I mean, doing something on your block, having something with people. Just say, this is just an example. I don't know that they say this thing in particular, but or specifically. But if you have people on your block, you find out that the person that you didn't speak to because they're from another country, they actually have the same problems with the school that you do, or they have the same issue with the bus driver. I mean, there is commonality in communities, but we have to go back to talking with each other. Of somehow, I mean, it sounds impossible, but it can't be impossible, because people want to belong. I mean, that's a human need to belong. So,
yeah, I think that absolutely. And the fact that these are, you know, some of these are probably virtual now, but hopefully they're not. Mostly they're just kind of like town hall meetings where people get together. I mean, it reminds me of like some of the classic social psychology studies, like the in-group out-group studies with the owls and codify all about I think that was the Turkish born social psychologist with the groups of kids who were on the owl team or the eagle team and pitting them against each other and then giving them a common purpose and all of the anti or the in-group out-group group dynamics kind of collapsed and they became one group and connected with each other a lot more.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of similar.
Yeah.
And I think that social psychology explains a lot of what's some of those theories. Yeah. What's going on with us now as far as like fracturing and in-group, out-group dynamics and how people can get a hold of those things when you're feeling siloed and lonely and feeling despair.
That's one of the things I think, and Trump did this, but so do other populist leaders. He's particularly good at it. And that is getting people to believe that he's for them. He's in their court. They feel like they belong to something. I think a lot of people think they could go down to Mar-a-Lago and just kind of walk in because he's one of their people. And obviously we know that would not ever work.
Well, but I wonder how many people have been, told to get off the premises because I'm sure it's happened. You're right. He's a very good communicator in that way. Yeah.
Michael Diamond, who's a psychoanalyst who's written a book about ruptures in American psyche, talks about something I talk about, but he uses a different language. And he talks about the regression that occurs in groups. Mm. And why is it that otherwise law-abiding citizens get together and they accept the things that Trump has done? And sometimes, in the case of the insurrection, do these things themselves. And I think he would say, Michael Diamond, that there's a regression in groups. People want to go along. They want to be accepted. So they participate. There's a term, actually it's a mathematical term, but it's used in mathematics, but it's also used now in politics. It's called stochastic terrorism. Mm. And what that means is basically another word for a rabble rouser. The scholastic... stochastic terrorists.
There you are.
Gets in front of the group, maybe at a rally, and implies something. For example, this happened in, I believe it was North Carolina. Trump said, Hillary's against guns. I don't know what'll happen. She may do banning of guns. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but it's not looking good. Now, has he actually done anything wrong?
Also he's let the people in the audience do the supply the answer to what he's saying.
That's
so,
right.
So they feel that they've in agreement with him and there's nothing there they can disagree with, right?
Yeah. So with stochastic terrorism, it's pretty certain that somebody will do something. You just can't predict who or when. And from this rally, somebody did do something with gun violence. It's the same idea of what happened with Mar-a-Lago and when the FBI came. Of course, Trump was the victim there. They invaded his home. The FBI are terrible, as he portrayed it. And the men in Cincinnati went to try to take over the FBI building. Unfortunately, that man was killed. But, Trump didn't go tell him to try to take over that. But people get the idea. Oh, yes. This leader who I really admire.
Yeah. And it seems to have infected other politicians. I guess Lindsey Graham is starting to do that now, absolutely, too, right? Like, things could be bad.
Absolutely.
I have no idea why he would do that, but, so you're right. I think that Trump's communication tactics and this kind of implication, terrorism by implication, and dog whistling, right, to followers, he seems to have done that. He seems to have really created or pulled that out of his playbook. And it seems to be infecting the rest of the party he's in, his current party. He used to be a Democrat.
Yeah, his current party, yeah.
Yeah.
There are three parties, actually. I think there's Democrats, Republicans, and the Trump party.
That's just
my own little conversation.
Yeah. Well, one of the other problems is we don't have other parties. Like, we have a two-party system, and that seems to be, maybe we're outgrowing that. I don't know. People would argue against it for various reasons, but... So we talked a bit about social media, and we talked about this kind of like idea of having, Bill Doherty having these kind of like, what was the project called again?
It's called Braver Angels. They have a website. They have a lot of information on their website. People can get involved in lots of ways, but it's a very interesting group.
Okay. Braver Angels. Yeah. And so those are two ways to kind of combat that. How can people, I mean, these are good ways to kind of, you know, wrap your head around conceptually with the framework with these psychodynamic or psychoanalytic ideas. How else can people out in the wide world kind of, protect themselves from what's going on? I mean, what would you recommend to people in the audience? How would they keep themselves from this kind of mental virus that's out there?
Well, I think people have to get involved. Mm-hmm. And if you can't get involved by speaking in enemy territory, then I think it's important to get involved with your own group. I think you get involved on the local level, local politics. I mean, you can start community things too, as I said, something on your block, but local politics, just to get involved so that if everybody has a voice and everybody feels like they belong to something, I mean, it's a pretty good cause. Democracy is a pretty good cause. I did an interview with Jamie Raskin and writing something on a chapter in something that I'm editing on democracy. And I mean, we have to get involved if we're going to save democracies. Every person did something. It would make a big difference. You mentioned mentalizing, listening to people in an atmosphere of respect. You don't have to agree with people. I mean, if you just get the idea of respectful listening and atmosphere of respect, that would be big. Now, how do you do it? Maybe slowly. With a group of people in your neighborhood, in your community. It's hard, but it's not impossible.
That kind of reminds me of, are you familiar with Joseph Beuys, the German artist? What he did, he took sculpture as being something a lot more esoteric and even practical. And so he would do social sculpting. Mm-hmm. So he would go to places like at the time when it was very contentious in Northern Ireland, and he would have the two sides, you know, the kind of Ulster Scots, Paisley Party folks meet with people who were home rule or wanting to, you know, in the Catholic, you know, Irish folks. And would sit down and try to change and manipulate the group dynamics in a positive way by having them come together, right? And I mean, he would do that in various places and did that in communities. So kind of social sculpting is a kind of interesting thought about that. And mentalizing, you mentioned, is being able to stay not reactive and stuck in your own kind of bubble or expecting, you know, an exchange of goods or services to meet with people and accept them, but rather not transactional, but rather just sit and be with them in a non-defensive kind of respectful atmosphere. You're right. Yeah. 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 Well, any other things? Have we missed anything that you'd like to talk about from the book or anything else on your mind?
I think you covered a lot.
We covered a lot.
We covered a lot. and also one chapter on the climate change, and it kind of hand in hand. People really need to get involved in that too, because there are a lot of problems with global warming. So, and populists, they contribute to it because they don't care about the resources of a country. They use the resources for their own good. So that's why I wove in the importance of doing something, contributing to the effort to clean up the planet. There are people who think it has to be a much more radical approach because the date of no return, not that the planet will end, but it won't be here anymore, but there will be uninhabitable places. It used to be 2035. It may be sooner than that. that now.
Right, which would cause desperate shifts in climate and possible resource issues. And of course, there's more desperation in the populace, which means populace could grab onto. Yeah, you're right. And I think that would be one way to, I know there's initiatives here in Chicago, like a clean river, an urban rivers project where people get together and clean up the river and make it more livable for wildlife and whatnot, and just better atmosphere. So, and for people.
Yeah, excuse me. I think the key thing is to get involved in something that's helpful, whether it's politics or whether it's cleaning up the environment. Just getting involved in a cause that can help people in a community, in a state, or the country, however one does it. But if everybody did something, the place would be, the world would be better off.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. Well, on that note, we will close up that positive note. Thank you so much, Dr. Karen Messina, for being here. For those of you interested, the book is Resurgence of Global Populism, a Psychoanalytic Study of Projective Identification, Blame Shifting, and the Corruption of Democracy. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott, very much. It was very enjoyable. Thank you.
Yeah, same here. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Did you know you can find the Psychology Talk podcast everywhere? Well, maybe not everywhere, but you can find us on Facebook and Instagram, and we have a website, www.psych-talk.com. All material is copyright the Psychology Talk podcast. This podcast is for entertainment and informative purposes only. If you need a behavioral health specialist, please seek one out. Music is provided by the band Serenati.